Hey there, 614 Startups community. We're thrilled to share some exciting news with you. This podcast is proudly supported by Loop, the game changers in return management. Not only are they revolutionizing e-commerce, but they're also on the lookout for talented individuals to join their dynamic team. Looking to be part of a company that values innovation and fosters a vibrant culture? Well, Loop is the place to be. Check out their open positions at loopreturns.com/careers. And here's the scoop. Loop has been recognized by Forbes as one of the next billion-dollar startups of 2023. Want to be part of a success story? Now's your chance. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity. Head over to loopreturns.com/careers and be part of something extraordinary. Loop, where innovation meets success. Apply now.
Support for the 614 Startups podcast comes from Nationwide. Nationwide's mission is to protect people, businesses, and futures with extraordinary care. To help fulfill that mission, Nationwide is looking to invest its $350 million venture capital investment fund in InsurTechs that will help them create new and exciting products and solutions to meet the needs of their customers. If you're interested in partnering with Nationwide's venture capital team, visit nationwideventures.com to learn more. Again, the website is nationwideventures.com. Nationwide is on your side.
Startups Nation, welcome to another episode of the 614 Startups Podcast. My name is Elio Harmon, and my mission is to help tech startups scale to their first $10,000 per month in monthly recurring revenue. Like a good guest, wipe your feet at the door by hitting the subscribe button and come on in. Today, we're going to be talking about the Ohio Angel Collective and how they can help you scale your startup. And here to chop it up with me are Mike Supek and Will Zell. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Wonderful to be here, Elio. Fantastic to see you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, so of course. I mean, you guys are making a lot of news because you're not wasting any time doing deals. And we love to hear that in Columbus. We definitely need more deals happening here. But I'm going to start with you, Will, with my first question for you guys. So what is the Ohio Angel Collective and why did you decide to launch the organization?
Yep. I'll start with the decision to launch first and then share a little bit about the organization and the structure. So I've been building in the tech community in Central Ohio for the last 12, 13 years now. And on that journey, both as an entrepreneur and investor, it's always been a challenge to raise pre-seed capital, right? And to get those early believers who will back your idea. In fact, I had to shut down my first two tech companies that I launched because I had made kind of miscalculations around the ease of raising that early capital. And so it's been something that's been on my mind for quite some time. And when I started Zell Capital, that's now known as Vessel, when I started that fund, in the first couple of years of our operations, we saw a bunch of Ohio-based founders that were reaching out to us and pitching us. But for a number of different reasons, whether it was capital or thesis or whatever it may be, we were just very constrained on being able to do the deals. And, you know, especially if I think from a thesis perspective, a lot of VCs are really, at the end of the day, super constrained. But we would look at these entrepreneurs, these founders from across the state, and you kind of step back and you're like, these are incredible people building great businesses, right? Just because I say no from a thesis perspective doesn't mean that it isn't an investable opportunity. In fact, it's probably a great deal. Yes, there's risk to it, but it should be able to provide a return. It's at least worth, you know, taking that early bet. But you see these founders struggling, and fundraising is always a struggle, but like struggling more than it should be in terms of getting those early believers. So I had that going on in kind of the back of my mind. Had a chance to meet Mike last year and had several conversations around this problem. And he's got a background in raising capital as well. And then came together with Corey Myers, our third founding partner, and who was thinking of the same thing. And, you know, we thought of different ways of like how we could go after solving this problem and decided to kind of throw the Ohio Angel Collective out there. And we did a, After building it a couple of months, kind of in stealth mode, we put it out there publicly in the middle of September of last year, and it's been awesome, just the response to it. So what the Ohio Angel Collective is it is an angel syndicate, and we'll get into kind of the difference between a syndicate and a fund, but it is an angel syndicate that is focused on deploying capital into pre-seed and seed stage funding rounds of Ohio and Ohio adjacent startups. So either based in Ohio fully, or let's say you've got a team of three co-founders and one of them's in Ohio and two are in other states. We'll look at those opportunities as well. So it is an effort to really look across the state and ecosystems close. So think of Northern Kentucky as well as part of the ecosystems that we'll take a look at. And it's an angel syndicate to increase the number of check writers for entrepreneurs in and around the state at that pre-seed and seed stage level.
Well, that's an awesome breakdown, Will. I love it. And yeah, man, you're OG in the game. At some point, we got to talk about the companies that didn't work, right? Because a lot of people look at successful entrepreneurs and like, oh yeah, this is the first one. This is the one, you know, he's just that good, right? So at some point, I want to do a series about entrepreneurs who had businesses that didn't work out. And for those of you who are trying to gaslight founders in Central Ohio, it is harder here. Okay. It's not just that it's just part of the game. We need more capital in Central Ohio. So I love what the Ohio Angel Collective is doing. And then syndicate just sounds gangster, man. I just like that better than fun. So we're going to break down what syndicate actually means. All right, Mike, I'm going to come to you. So break down angel investing. Definition, concept, how it works, and then who qualifies to be an angel.
So angel investing is really any investing that happens in the earliest stages of the capital continuum in that pre-seed or earlier angel stage, some may say. So usually the companies that are looking for funding in those stages, a lot of times they're very early on in the establishment of their company. They're still sort of incubating their idea. A lot of the time they're pre-revenue. Sometimes they have a little bit of revenue, kind of their early first couple customers. They're still, you know, working on establishing their product market fit and just looking to kind of establish the foundation of the company. Also, a lot of these companies, they, you know, don't really have any teams built out. Sometimes there'll be, you know, a set of co-founders or one founder and maybe one or two more people. But a lot of times the teams are very small. The product, they're still working on iterating, still working on, you know, kind of finalizing their MVP and bringing their product to market. In terms of who can be an angel investor, any accredited investor, which, you know, you could go find the, you know, definition of accredited investor. Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's $200,000 a year of total income for 2 years in a row. And then there's also an asset requirement, right, Will?
Yeah, it's either or. It's either an income or an asset requirement. It's $1 million of net worth outside of your primary residence.
Yep. So as long as an angel qualifies to be an accredited investor, they can invest in these, you know, early stage companies. A lot of times, in terms of our membership at the OAC, we're up to about 137 members as of today. A lot of just great folks from that live in Ohio, some that live outside of Ohio and the rest of the United States. But they come from a variety of industries. From, you know, we have real estate developers. We have folks that, you know, have made a living in manufacturing, ex-tech founders. Really, just a very wide range of people that are members of the OAC. And what's special about that is not only do you create this melting pot of diverse backgrounds and experience, but we get to when those members make investments in our portfolio companies, we get to then make connections between those members that have this, you know, extremely diverse set of experience, and then they can offer that experience, that mentorship, that expertise to the companies that we interface with, which is awesome. We've already started to see that happening, and we, you know, hope that that continues to happen at scale. So that's one really cool thing about having kind of this big group of diversified people that are all members of the OAC.
Yeah, man, let me go ahead and pitch. Hey, of you 137 people, anybody with experience in media, holla at me. All right. So Will, I'm coming to you next because I need the mentorship, man. This is what the collective is all about. You guys are already getting me excited about engaging with you because it's more than just capital, which is what all startup founders need, right? You need people
who've walked the walk and can give you good advice. So I was going to ask the question this way, like thinking that you guys had a fund, but let's just get into the definition of what a syndicate is, how you intend to grow, maybe the number of members at this point, since it is a syndicate. And then what is the minimum, right? If I meet the threshold for being an angel, what's the minimum to become a member of OAC?
Yep. No, it's a great question. And it's a really important distinction for the OAC specifically. So a lot of times when you think about, you know, angels and VCs, a lot of people's minds go to a fund, right? And a fund is where you have a management company that creates a legal entity, the fund entity itself, and they go out and they get commitments from individual investors to invest into that entity. And that entity pools capital, right? So if I raise $10 million and $1 million from 10 different investors as a fund, those 10 investors put $1 million into this entity. And then I, as the manager, make all of the investment decisions. So I run the diligence process, the funnel of opportunities, and myself and whoever has been established as the investment committee actually make the decision for investment and then deploy the capital into the company. So from an investor's point of view in the fund, it's a blind pool fund is what that's described as. So we are different than that. So a syndicate, think of syndicate as a community, right, that you're building. So generally in a fund structure for venture capital funds, on average, there are 100 investors into a fund. Sometimes you can go a little bit higher, but you know the traditional model for venture capital or angel funds is you've got a limited number of people that has a regulatory requirement to it. As a syndicate, where there is no pooled capital, there's no singular entity that is a fund where investors put money into. Instead, what they do is they become a member of the OAC. They join our community or join our syndicate. And for us, we've made that very, very easy. So there is no amount of capital that you have to commit to invest in our deals on an annual basis. There is no fee that you have to pay in order to become a member of the OAC. So we really want to create a frictionless experience for people, especially those who may be new to angel investing, to onboard as members in the OAC and learn about and then start building a portfolio of angel investments. So the way that a syndicate works, very different than a fund, is with our membership, there's really no limit in essence to the number of members that we could have, right? We're at 137 now. We very much need to and want to see our membership grow into hundreds, if not thousands of individuals. So there's just no ceiling on the number of members that you can have in a syndicate. So the way that our syndicate works is we've got a growing membership of individuals. And what they're basically doing as a member is they're saying that I am accredited and I am interested in investing capital into pre-seed and seed stage companies across the state of Ohio or Ohio adjacent. So then what the team does is that we are out there, we're doing the work to manage the funnel of opportunities. So since we've launched, we've engaged with over 150 startups that are raising capital in our areas of focus, which is kind of wild, actually. So there's a lot of companies that are out there raising, and Mike, along with Tom Shoger, who's the head of research at Vessel, do a phenomenal job of engaging and having conversations with those startups. And then we work a funnel through, it's heavily influenced by our investment process at Vessel, to basically bring, let's say, a funnel of a couple dozen companies at any given time down to a handful that are have a high degree of credibility, fit, you know, this investment criteria that we're looking for. And then on once or twice a month, we'll make a selection as a group to say, this is the deal that we want to bring in front of our syndicate members. Once we've decided that, then we take that that opportunity and we send it out to our syndicate members. And then they get to make an individual decision on whether or not they want to invest in the deal, right? So it's the ultimate decision to invest is not us as fund or as managers of the syndicate. The ultimate decision to invest is the individual member's decision. And that is the key difference between a fund and a syndicate. So if you think about kind of the why of why we're going after a syndicate model, right? As you know, raising capital is very similar to a sales process. If you look at even the best entrepreneurs that are out there, everyone generally starts with the adage that I have to have 100 conversations in order to get the one or two investors to believe in me and start to write the check. And our belief is that one of the biggest problems across the state, not even just in Central Ohio, there's a reason why it's the Ohio Angel Collective, statewide, is that there is a top of the funnel problem, meaning we need to expand the number of individuals at the top of the funding funnel that are willing to say, yes, I want to invest into angel deals. And that's the beauty of the syndicate model is it allows us to build that population, that membership of people to, you know, to hopefully thousands of people at some point. Because then from a numbers perspective, if I start with a much larger number at the top of the funnel, it increases my likelihood or the probability that I can find that one or two or three people who say, yes, I believe in that company and I want to invest. So it's going to be a process and we're very much a startup ourselves. So we're on a journey to figure out and really like, how do we get this to be a finely tuned engine that runs? But it is, you know, number one is how do we build that membership and, you know, make it as large as we possibly can, and then find great founders and teams that are building, which actually hasn't been the problem.
Yeah, man, I love it. Very sexy. I'm sold. Okay, Will, I like the model. I see where you're going with it. I see that it's going to create a tremendous amount of opportunity, and it's really solving a problem, right? Because the status quo is talk to 100 people and maybe you might get investment. You're kind of turning that on its head, and I really love that. I think this model really works well for both sides, both the founders and the people looking for investment. So here's my question, and this is kind of off the beaten path. Mike, you can take a shot at it first, and then maybe Will, you could add your thoughts. But I didn't really think at first about not only who qualifies to be an angel, but what kind of temperament, risk tolerance, do you need to have to be an angel? So Mike, take a shot at that. And Will, if you want to add to it, I'd love to hear your thoughts as well.
For sure. So yeah, so you know, an angel investor can come from any background, any expertise, any industry, as long as they're an accredited investor. But in terms of them having a risk tolerance, they have to understand that this is a risky asset class. And there is a benefit towards diversifying across a number of companies in order to make sure that, you know, you're not, you know, betting huge on one company that has a high likelihood of, you know, potentially, you know, not being successful or, you know, just not working out. So they have to understand that there is a high risk tolerance necessary. However, we've taken steps towards allowing our angel investors to diversify their investments across a number of opportunities. One thing that we've done in order to do that is introduced a subscription model recently. We're calling it the OAC Core Subscription Program. What that means is that an angel investor can come in for a minimum of $1,000, and they can invest that $1,000 per deal across, you know, all the deals we do until they, you know, opt out of the subscription program. Another thing to note is that investors at any time that are signed up to the subscription program, they can opt out of a deal if they would like, and they can also choose to increase their investment amount per deal as well. So we've had a lot of interest in that very early, and that was feedback that we were getting on some surveying we were doing with our membership, and that they wanted to diversify across a number of investments. They trusted the diligence that we were doing, and they trusted us as operators to make sure that we were bringing good companies through to the collective. And it's been awesome. So far, we have about almost $17,000 committed to our subscription program, which means that, you know, if we invest in 12 companies this year, that's, you know, getting close to $200,000 that's already pre-committed just for this year. And that continues to grow. We just launched that about a week and a half ago. So we hope that continues to grow into the future. And we're really excited about that. And that kind of plays into that risk tolerance in that, the angels that are signing up for that subscription program recognize that diversifying across a number of companies, you know, may increase their likelihood of success over time. Will, anything to add there?
Man, we could spend hours just talking about this question alone. I think Mike hit the nail on the head in terms of the temperament. So when you get into like portfolio theory or, you know, running an investment strategy across a wide spectrum of assets over decades to drive towards goals, lifetime goals or retirement goals. When you look at venture capital as an asset class, you know, there is a more meaningful risk of the failure of any one company that you would invest in compared to you go and invest in the public stock market, right? So if I go and invest into 10 companies or one company in the public stock market, there is a significantly lower amount of risk of that company going out of business than if I go and I invest in one company that is a startup, right? So when it comes to how to deploy capital into the venture capital asset class, building a portfolio of exposure is absolutely critical. So if I have $50,000, right? So you start with the basis that of, you know, however much capital you have to invest, you would only want to put a small percentage of that at risk into venture capital. So let's say that number is $50,000. If I take that $50,000 and I put it into one startup, there is a high degree of probability that $50,000 will go to zero, right? If I take that $50,000 and I put $5,000 into 10 companies, then from a probability perspective, portfolio theory perspective, there is a much higher probability that I will drive a better return on my investment than putting it into one company. If I take that 50 and I put it $1,000 across 50 startups, again, even a higher probability of a better return on an investment. So you really, when it comes to angel investing, the number of at-bats per dollar invested is one of the number one thing that angel investors have to focus on. And so that's why we want to bring that minimum investment down to, you know, the $1,000 per deal in our subscription model, or if you just want to opt into each deal one at a time at your leisure, then that minimum is $2,500. So it makes it very approachable for somebody to start to build that portfolio. Because it does take time. If you're making investments with us today, honestly, you're putting that capital to work in a company where it may be 10 years, honestly, and we just have to be frank about it. It may be 10 years before that capital is returned, if it's ever returned. Now, sometimes it's faster, it's 5-7 years. But on average, you got to think about this as capital deployed that has the potential for a return a decade from now. The goal is that if it does take in 10 years for that to return, then on an IRR, internal rate of return basis, how much I made basically effectively each year is way better than what I could have done in other asset classes like the S&P 500, for instance.
Listen, phenomenal explanation. And I was going to ask this question to add on to that, talking about the current state of venture funding and where do you see holes, but you guys are filling a big hole. And if I know my audience right now, they're like, Elio, cut. We don't care about the angel side of it. We care about how we get money. All right. So let's skip that question for now. And let's just go right into the engagement with startup founders. So what do you look for when you're identifying a deal and trying to find a match with your members? What do you look for? And then what is the average check size for the deals that you've done so far?
Definitely. So
either one of you can take, maybe Mike could jump in and then Will, you can add to it.
Yeah. So just from a base level, our thesis revolves around, like Will said earlier, Ohio based companies or Ohio adjacent companies. And we invest in tech enabled and consumer packaged goods companies. So we keep that thesis very broad. But we keep it broad for a reason, because we want our members to be able to decide what they would like to invest in, and we want to provide them with a range of opportunities to invest in. In terms of what we look for when we interface with these companies, you know, being so early, it's very important to us that these founders have thought very hard about what the market wants. And a big thing that we look for is that the product or service that these founders are building is not what the founders think that the market wants, but what the founders know that the market wants based on market feedback. And allowing the market to determine your product roadmap is a lot more viable of a solution than the founders making guesses as to, you know, what features they should build or what product they should build or what niche they should cater to. So that's a big one. Getting a lot of feedback from early customers, you know, building based on that customer feedback, doing market, you know, research, market reviews of potential customers, that's very important. And also at this very early stage, you know, with a lot of these products sometimes being even pre-MVP or just very early on, is that it's a big focus on the people as well. So when we decide to, you know, move a company through our investment process, a big part of our time is spent establishing a deep relationship with that founder or founding team and ensuring a few things. Number one, that they're, you know, communicative, that they're coachable. Coachability is one of the most important parts, because like we talked about earlier, you know, we want to provide strategic value to the founders that are in our portfolio. And we have a lot of members that are going to provide strategic value as well. So we want to make sure that founder is open to advice, mentorship, coaching, and also willing to implement changes based on that, you know, advice, mentorship, and coaching. Also, we like to, you know, as we build a relationship with these founders, we like to kind of track their actions over time. So for example, we've recently been interfacing with a company where we met them about October last year. As part of our first meeting, they told us some things that were on their product roadmap that they were going to work on, a few goals they wanted to hit. And then we talked to them a month later and they had done, you know, nearly all of it. And that's, you know, that's one checkbox, like, okay, they said they were going to do X and they did X. So then we talked to them again, got an update from their company, heard what they were going to do next, talked to them a month later and they did it. So that, it's just proving that they're able to deliver on promises. They're able to make incremental progress over time. And also some of the advice and coaching that we were, you know, offering them, they implemented some of that into their strategy. So being able to see that just, you know, proves that they're going to continue to be adaptive and iterative in their, you know, not only their product, but also in the way that they strategize their business and their long-term roadmap. Will, anything to add?
Yeah. So a couple things. Kind of one, just especially any startup that's reached out to us, or if you're going to be reaching out to us in the near term, know that when we kind of put our, shingle out there in September, we were inundated, as I mentioned, over 150 startups that reached out to us. And we are very much a startup ourselves. So we've spent a lot of time on process of like how we bring opportunities in the funnel, the cadence of, you know, conversations and making decisions. And then what's the right balance of how we introduce these to our membership. And you know, we've already iterated 20 times and we'll iterate 20 more times as we refine our process. So kind of overarching, you know, request number one is just have patience with us. Cause it's been a bit overwhelming. Mike and Tom are rock stars and the number of conversations that they've had. I would say the only thing I would add on what we look for, and Elio, it's a like much deeper conversation I would love to have at some point. Is that there's a need in our culture and our ecosystem to learn more and more around what it actually takes to underwrite a pre-seed deal and to go about understanding the factors that matter when making an investment decision. And what I mean by that is you're never going to underwrite a pre-seed deal on a discounted cash flow forecast of a 10-year or 5-year financial projections that they put out there, right? Because if you as a company have not made a dollar, then how can I run a return model around these assumptions that you're making around making, you know, $50 million 5 years from now? And being on the other side of the table as a founder myself and creating a lot of these financial models that mean absolutely nothing, it's just not a way, it's not the way that you underwrite pre-seed deals is very, very different. And it's something around cultures, coastal cultures like Silicon Valley, the Northeast, where ingrained in the culture is an understanding of what it takes to actually build startups. And we like to think about market displacement, as Mike was saying, and understanding how new entrants ultimately displace the status quo is really the driver of opportunity for us. So again, probably for another time, but our hope is that not only in the decisions that we make and the conversations we have with founders and the way that we expose our members to our investment process, we can be part of just this broader education of how to think about, you know, how and why startups actually work when they do work. When it comes to the investment size, we're just getting started there as well. So we've closed 4 deals. And I think in total across those 4 was over $200,000 invested. So a little over $50,000 per deal. Our goal is to be much higher than that. At a minimum, we'd love to invest $100,000 into each deal. And if we can really get our core subscription built up, we feel like we've got a shot at being in a position where we have confidence of having around $200,000 at a minimum to invest in each deal. Our personal view is if we can deploy somewhere between $200,000 and $250,000 per deal into 12 to 15 deals per year, then, and we can do that over the next decade, that will be a part of very positive transformation for the ecosystems across the state.
Yeah, man. Mike and Will need money. So we're going to take a break real quick. You're going to go to OhioAngelCollective.com. You're going to hit these guys up. You're going to send them some money. We need to increase the size of these checks. All right, folks, let's pay some bills. We'll be right back after these messages.
This episode is brought to you by Rev1. Rev1's mission is to help entrepreneurs build great companies. As you navigate the waters of business entrepreneurship, you don't have to go it alone. A strategic partnership with Rev1 connects innovators to the talent, customers, space, and funding you need when you need it. Get started with Rev1 Startup Studio by visiting rev1ventures.com to learn more. Again, the website is rev1ventures.com.
This episode is brought to you by KJK. Tired of the billable hour? KJK has a solution. The KJK GC Advantage program offers businesses comprehensive legal services in the areas of employment, corporate services, real estate, trademark, intellectual property, and estate planning, all for a set monthly fee. KJK serves as their clients' partners in business, not just their lawyers. Along with cost certainty and predictability, the KJK GC Advantage program gives clients peace of mind, knowing their projects will be handled quickly and efficiently, maximizing the return on investment on their legal spend. So don't go it alone. Let KJK help. Learn more by visiting KJK.com. 614 Startups Nation, welcome back. I knew you would be back because we're talking about getting money into your company. All right, so next question. I'm going to come to Will first, and then Mike, you can add to it. So there are people right now excited, but you need more than excitement when somebody reaches out to you. So what do founders need to do to prepare to engage with you when they are ready to raise a round?
Yeah, and I would say not even just the OAC, but across the board. So I've lived on both sides of this table as a founder, you know, being told no a lot, but then also you know, being in a position where we've raised, you know, close to be knocking on, so over 50 million. I'll just say that for Asset Watch so far, and there'll be news coming out later about our next round. So, you know, have been in a position to understand kind of what it takes. And first and foremost, I think there are a couple of things. The number one thing is to educate yourself on actually what it takes to get venture capital investors to invest in you. So there are a large number of people and entrepreneurs that believe that they need to go and raise venture capital. But their market opportunity, their business, nothing wrong with it by any means, but it's not structured as a potential opportunity for venture capitalists to drive the type of returns that they have to drive in order to be competitive and continue to build their own brand. And what I mean by that is there are a lot of other options for raising capital that individual entrepreneur needs to consider and understand and learn about. And venture capital or angel investors is just one sliver of that optionality. And in fact, I would argue that it's not even necessarily the best. There's nothing better than bootstrapping and figuring out how to build your business off of revenue, at least in the early days, and preserving equity in your company. And then if you, you know, hit high growth mode, then potentially bringing in more capital. So education, so really understanding what VCs are looking for when they make investment decisions, or even angel investors. Number two, having patience. It is, again, a natural process where the vast majority of the time you're going to be told no. Think of it as a sales process. I go and I talk to 20 people, and the majority of the time they're just not going to be interested, or it's not going to be a match, and they're going to say no. And so you've got to prepare yourself that when you're told no, it's not because of you necessarily, right? It's that you and the investor, there wasn't chemistry there in order for it to happen. And then number three is, I think what Mike mentioned earlier, which is this is really a relationship game, right? And so being able to build relationships as early as you possibly can with people that you're interested in raising capital from. And there is nothing better and more encouraging than if we have a conversation and you say you're going to do this, this, and this, and 4 months later you did those things. Like that is so, so, so very important. Or like you tried these things, two of them didn't work and two of them did work, and now we're going to focus on these next three things. Well before you're even out there asking for money, if you will, or actively raising, you want to try to build as many relationships as you possibly can with potential funding partners. So so then that's just kind of baseline. So then practically speaking, a good materials for a presentation. So whether it's a pitch deck or an investment memo, collateral that clearly articulates what you are trying to build and the why that is behind it. And then enough practice in communicating that, that you can get onto a Zoom call for 30 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour, and share that with passion, but with also enough data and information that that you'll be able to answer any questions that investors have. The only other thing I would add to that is, from my point of view, there's nothing better than a great data room after that. There's good hygiene when it comes to raising capital. And even if you're just getting going, having a nice, even just Google Drive folder set up of here's our incorporation documents, and here's our capitalization table, and here's our pitch deck, and you know, whatever you have it ready to go for investors with a very simple link that you can send to them where they can go in and start their diligence process. Mike, I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
No, I think you covered just about everything, Will. I think that one thing to add for me that I've noticed in a lot of our pitches, because we've looked at about 140 companies over the last 6 months, which is awesome. But one thing that I've caught on to is that I feel that a lot of founders feel as if though they're being interviewed during one of these pitch calls. Whereas, you know, I encourage founders to embrace the call as a conversation as much as possible, because the closer it is to a natural conversation, the closer it will be towards building that early relationship like we've been talking about. And also, you know, be brief. You need to find the right balance of detail and brevity. A lot of times a founder will err on the side of detail, which is awesome because we want to know everything about their company. But we also, you know, talk to a lot of companies, and we're doing this very often. So brevity and the right amount of brevity is very important. Answering questions succinctly, but with enough detail to clearly communicate the point to us, that's super important. Because as much as I would love to spend, you know, multiple hours with each founder, really getting to know them and getting to know their business, it's just not possible to do that with the type of volume that we see, and really that any VC sees. So that's what I would say, just focusing on having a natural conversation and finding that, you know, right amount of brevity in your responses to the questions that we ask.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I'm passionate about is storytelling. You could say a lot in a story that you can't necessarily say going through slides in a slide deck, right? The power of questions, the power of getting people sucked in
to the problem, the why, and things like that. It's something that is fundamental, right? All of the great founders, those who are very, very good at raising capital, are always usually great storytellers. All right. So besides capital, how else does the OAC support its portfolio company? So once you've invested in them, after that transaction, what are some other ways you're supporting your portfolio companies?
So just a few things that come to mind for me that we've already had the opportunity to provide to the companies that we've invested in is of course opening up our personal networks for not only assisting in syndicating their round and helping them get the rest of the capital necessary to close their round and get back to work, but also our members opening up their networks too, and our great team of strategic advisors. The power of the network of the OAC is very strong, and it's been very gratifying to see how many new customer relationships we've been able to introduce, how many new VC and other funding source relationships we've been able to open up. So that's been super awesome, because it sort of proves that model of a communal group that is here to support the portfolio companies through and through. Other than that, I'd say that we like to get strategic with the companies if they're working through a problem they have either on their product or with one of their customers. We're willing to get sort of down and dirty as much as we can and helping them solve that based on the experience that we've had as a team and as founders previously. Will, what else do you think are some good resources that we offer the founders in the portfolio?
So I think it's important to note that we're generally not lead investors in these deals. Now we also don't necessarily require an established lead. Let's say you've got the OAC and a few other angel investors that you're bringing into a round, but we're generally not the only investor that's participating in a round. So with that said, not being in a lead role, and lead investors generally set the terms of an investment round. They take a direct advisory seat or board seat. They become the one that's, on behalf of all of the other investors in around, they're saying, we've got this one and we're going to do our best to help it grow. So we're not generally in the lead role. So what we want to be, though, is the absolute best non-lead investor that you could ever imagine having on your cap table, and bringing together our collective experience, both as the team at OAC and Vessel and our membership, to just do whatever it takes. I mean, at the end of the day, like, it's the cool thing about investing in startups, and I think it's important for any potential investor to understand, is that, like, if I go to the grocery store today and I buy a 12 pack of Coca-Cola, there is nobody in the Coca-Cola company, if you will, that is going to celebrate that decision that I just made, right? I'm spending money with them, but there's no one that's going to say, "Will, thank you so much for buying this case of Coca-Cola." However, if you're invested in a startup and you have the ability to introduce a customer to that startup, or you become a consumer of the product of that startup, or you introduce a strategic relationship to that startup, or you invest your capital in that startup, you can literally move the needle with just a singular action. It goes from, like, nobody cares about you to where you become the most important person in that day, in that week, potentially that month, to a company that is going all in to pursue their dream. And there's just something that's very real and visceral about that experience that I think is super important. And again, established startup ecosystems and cultures get that. And so we want to do just whatever it takes to have that impact for the companies that we're invested in. The other thing I will say is that we're also super focused on what can we do for companies that we just say no to, right? Because at the end of the day, we want to be great investors. We want to do everything that we just said. We want to build a great syndicate. But by nature of the asset class, we're still going to have to say no to the vast majority of opportunities that come across our desk, if you will. So if that is a no, then how can we still add value? How can we, what resources can we put into the hands of founders that are out there building? There is, like, you hear a bunch, and there's a bunch of ego in the venture capital asset class kind of worldwide, right? And a decent amount of hubris. And at the end of the day, you have to understand that when you're working with a team at Ohio Angel Collective or Vessel, the number one thing that we celebrate is the fact that you're an entrepreneur and you've taken the risk to get out and pursue a dream. And just that decision and the work that we know that you put into to making that happen is so incredibly important. And so if we're not in the position to be able to add capital and celebrate you in that way, what can we do? What value can we create to be as encouraging as we possibly can for founders on that journey?
Yeah, well, I love the fact that those early experiences, right, are fueling, it feels very much like it's fueling the value system at OAC, and I love to see it, that those experiences are not going to waste, but other entrepreneurs are going to benefit from that. And so there's a reason for all of that, right? Not saying you wanted to have such a rough time, but you are paying it forward because of your experience.
I'm a country boy from Belle Fountain, Ohio, man. And at the end of the day, we fundamentally believe that there are awesome women and men that are building great companies in every single county across the state, right? And we want to be in the position where we can help develop and foster that ecosystem over decades.
That's great, man. I remember you invited me out to Belle Fountain. I hung out there with the folks from Small Nation. You should check that out on YouTube, man. I was out there in the country. Speaking of which, man, I know it's the Asset Watch now, but one of my favorite pieces of clothing, you know, eventually I wore through it, is that Nikola Labs sweatshirt. So put a note down, man. Get me a vintage updated Nikola Labs sweatshirt. Yeah, I need that, man. All right. Yep. So, all Mike, right. Let's talk about deal flow, what you're seeing currently and what you would like to see, right? I know you know, we're in Ohio. What are you seeing today and what would you like to see?
I'd say we've had absolutely no shortage of deal flow, Ilio. Like I said, we've seen about 140 companies over the last 6 months. And we're just now starting to, you know, really get deep in our relationships with all of the other capital providers in the state to, you know, share deal flow and have sessions where we go over the companies in our pipeline and share companies that we think might, you know, fit each other's theses. So even before we had a lot of those relationships, you know, established, we were already seeing a ton of deal flow just from, you know, like some basic LinkedIn posting and having a form on our website. You know, when Will mentioned earlier that we were sort of inundated in the early days, that was solely from just a form on our website with little to no, you know, marketing of what the OAC was or what we did, which is amazing. Because now as we start to ramp up those relationships and find more deals and more people hear about us, we're seeing more and more. And so in terms of volume, no shortage of deal flow at all. We see deals across a variety of industries. I don't think there's any improvements that could be made there either. Of course, Ohio is known for a lot of great med tech, and we see a ton of really good med tech companies. Also, a ton of AI companies. You know, a lot of SaaS products, a lot of consumer packaged goods, which I wasn't familiar with that there were so many awesome CPG companies in Ohio, but we're seeing those as well. So, you know, in terms of volume, no problem there. Industry, no problem there. I really think there's just a lot of high quality deal flow. And we established the Ohio Angel Collective knowing that founders were building a lot of great companies here already. But it even shocked us who already believed in the state and the companies that were being built here. So to already have an expectation that we were going to get a lot and have our expectations blown away, that's just really special. I'd say that, you know, no matter how many deals we see, we'll always be happy to see more. And we hope to continue just to see more founders come and build great companies here. More, you know, existing folks that may be a member of another startup or work for a larger company. You know, we'd love to see just more people become founders and start to build products that, you know, that are great. Also, you know, other things that excite us is like Techstars coming to, you know, coming to Columbus and in partnership with OSU and hoping that that's going to, you know, increase the attention that is on not only Central Ohio, but Ohio as a whole and, you know, also attract more founders. But if I was to sit here for a few minutes and really try to think of what I would want to see in deal flow, it would be tough. We're very satisfied with what we see, and just we get more and more excited each day as, you know, our Slack channel dings every time a new submission pops up on our website for a new company. You know, you're always excited to open that up and read the form and see, you know, see who it is. So, Will, any suggestions you have?
No, you nailed it. Builders are building across the state. It's beautiful to see. We just need more.
All right. Now it's time to name drop, right? Some of these deals that you've done, the companies that you've invested in. Will, what are some of the companies that you've invested in? What problems are they solving? And what really got you excited enough to say, hey, I think we got something here?
Yep. So there are a couple that are out of Central Ohio. I'll hit those, and then Mike, you can hit our Northern Ohio and then our Cincy-based awesome companies. So here in Central Ohio, the first is a company called Source Co. The founder is Tomas Mugin, known Tomas for many, many years. And what's interesting about Source Co. is, so in as much as like venture capitalists and in private equity, you're investing in the future and you know, especially on the VC side of things, in technology. If you look at the actual business models and like infrastructure and how private market investment firms do deals, whether it's a private equity company or a venture capital company, it's relatively archaic. And so what Source Co. is doing is they're pulling together a tech-enabled experience to really help firms find great deal flow and qualified and all the data that is dependent on it. And so we like it from the fact that it's a cash flowing business, right? The way that there's a kind of a traditional element to how they do deals and work with their customers, but there's this tech enablement that if they can really nail what they want to get done on their product roadmap, you can see this really being able to blossom into a venture scale opportunity. The second one is Dollar, based in Central Ohio. So Dollar is actually a company that we're invested in out of our flagship fund. And so it's awesome to have the OAC co-invested. And Dollar, you know Naveed, awesome founder, like great story. It's a beautiful company. I love, if I could find only companies to invest in that had like a Dollar type archetype, it would be amazing, because Dollar is solving a huge problem. They're leveraging regulatory innovation to empower employers to help their employees accelerate the pay down of student debt. And so rather than just, you know, contributing to a 401k that's a future opportunity, employers can help employees put out this fire that's burning in their life right now, which is the student debt and this monthly payment that I have that is holding me back from investing in other aspects and more important aspects of life. So Dollar is a platform for individuals to help accelerate their pay down their student debt. So you've got tech enablement, the potential for venture scale, but then the fundamental problem that is being solved is a huge societal problem. So it's just positives all around and a wonderful founder to boot. Mike?
For sure. So two more great companies that we've invested in. Narratize is an AI platform that's used to kind of drive market leadership for, you know, ideas that are generated internally and you know, big companies or enterprises. So if you know, an enterprise is internally generating IP or any sort of innovative technology, a lot of times that IP or that technology needs to sort of be socialized internally within the company. And there's, you know, a lot of things that Narratize can do in order to help that. And not only do they socialize that IP, that technology, that research, that finding internally, but also, you know, it could be externally. So Narratize is an AI platform where, you know, you provide them with data of whatever that technology or IP is, and then it has a, you know, multiple use cases for how you can sort of socialize that internally or externally. For example, an internal product team could generate a pitch for their product concept to senior leadership. Or if an R&D team needs to generate a research report that validates a product's claims, or The product marketing function within a company needs to transform claims into articles or social media posts. That's something Narrativize can handle all those use cases and automatically generate that using AI. So really great company based out of Cincinnati, really awesome founding team, and they've been, you know, a pleasure to work with. Also, we've invested in a company called Peaceful Fruits out of Barberton, Ohio, another great company. So Peaceful Fruits makes dried fruit products that kind of live between the health food kind of snack bar, but also candy spectrum. You know, they want to be sort of a healthy dried fruit, no additive product that can live in a candy aisle and be attractive to the same market that would be, you know, out searching to buy a product like a, you know, a candy or another sweet. So one of the my favorite products that comes from Peaceful Fruits is it's like the pink roll of gum tape that you buy at the grocery store next to the cash register that everyone's familiar with from being a kid. They make that, but with dried fruit, with no additives, no artificial dyes, colors. It's solely just fruit and fruit juice that, you know, it's like a fruit leather rolled up in the same roll that you're used to in the same container that you're used to. So that one's really awesome. They make some other great products that are good for kids, like sticker sheets of, you know, different shapes and sizes, and just a really awesome company. They're expanding quickly. They're in markets all across the U.S., like Trader Joe's and Whole Foods and Lifetime Fitness. So just really excited to see all the companies that we've invested in, the two that Will talked about, and also Narrativize and Peaceful Fruits continue to grow. And hopefully we can continue to provide some value to them over time.
I love it, man. How dare peach rings be made out of peaches? You know what I'm saying? These millennials and Gen Z are ruining candy. Big shout out to Peaceful Fruits for creating a healthier world. I love it. And I love all those companies. I'm a huge fan of Naveed and what he's doing over at Dollar. All right. So last but not least, what's next for you guys? And how do founders get a hold of you? I know you alluded to getting a hold of you being very, very easy, but let's just reiterate that so people can reach out to you if they need to. Will, why don't you take that one?
Yep. So we are really rolling out that core subscription model that we discussed and really focus on how do we build that, you know, to a very meaningful amount. So if you think about, you know, we're at 137 members now. If we could end the year at well north of 300, I think we would be very, very happy. In fact, you know, internally we're shooting for, can we get to 500? And a meaningful number of those in the subscription program. So that's really kind of top of mind. Mike and Tom have done an incredible job of really building out a sustainable process for us as we bring opportunities through the funnel. And we want to institutionalize that this year, if that makes sense. So getting that engine going and humming really well. And being around the state, honestly, we have a internal goal of getting a member from every county, all 88 counties in the state of Ohio. So you may see us on some ridiculous road shows over the year, driving to the nether parts of Ohio, literally signing up people for the OAC. So we're going to figure out how to get it done one way or another. And when it comes to getting a hold of us, Mike's the man. You want to share that, Mike?
For sure. So anyone can reach out to me on LinkedIn. They can email me at mike@OhioAngelCollective. They could fill out the form on our website, whether they're an angel or a founder. If you're an angel, there's a Join Us tab. You could fill out the form there. We'll reach out to you with next steps about joining. If you're a founder, there's a pitch tab. You can go there, submit your pitch deck, answer a few quick questions, then that'll be, you know, sent right to our deal flow platform. But you know, anyone can feel free to reach out to me, to Will, to Corey Myers, to Tom Shoger, to anyone on the team that wants to get connected, even if it's just to hear more. You know, one thing that we encourage, of course, we want every founder building something cool to apply for a funding through the OAC. But also on the angel side, you know, if you're an angel investor, an existing angel investor, of course, we'd love to have you as a member. But if you're an accredited investor that has yet to write your first angel check, you know, the way we built the OAC with super low minimums, no commitment necessary, no annual membership fee, we did that very purposefully. And what we want that to do is encourage people that are accredited investors to come join the OAC, gain trust in us as operators, build a personal relationship with us, see the way that other members invest, see the deals that we bring through the pipeline, and really just get acquainted with the process so that when the day comes, when they do feel comfortable to write their first angel check, they'll already understand how the process works. They'll understand what to expect in a deal, you know, and they'll be ready to fire away. So I encourage anyone that has a curiosity in angel investing to reach out to us. We're always happy to hop on a call, meet for a coffee, go to lunch, and just share our experience and just some more information about the OAC.
All right, Mike, all right, Will, thank you guys so much for coming on the show. Folks, I got to close things out with my final word, and I've been inspired by Will Zell and the fact that he took his pain and turned that into a value that drives his company. Guys, if you're out there, you're struggling, you're trying to build a business, you're running into walls, and you're being frustrated, take all of that experience and turn it into something positive. And if you don't have a community out there where you can do that, we want 614 Startups to be the community where you can. So whether or not you're sharing your experience on this show, you're coming out to an event, you're volunteering, you're sponsoring, we want you to be part of this community. We feel that no pain should go wasted. Let's turn it into a positive right here on 614 Startups. All right, folks, until next time, peace.
That's a wrap, folks. You can find this and all our episodes on our website, 614startups.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, and all your favorite podcasting platforms. Don't forget to subscribe and write a review. If you'd like updates sent directly to your inbox, you can sign up for our weekly newsletter on the website. To engage in the 614 Startups community, follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at 614 Startups on all platforms and join the conversation. For sponsorship opportunities and collaborations, email us at info@614startups.com.